Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists, they did. They absolutely got it right. And as we continue to see it proven out in our everyday present history, I'm not surprised at anything, nor should you be, especially those that listen to this program and those that are on either Liberty Works Radio Network or, you know, Dr. Mike Spaulding on Soaring Eagle and all of the different other programming that is out there from a very informed Christian point of view. There should be no surprises. Today's program, I'm going to go down the route of how is a house built, or more so, how is this house built, and what is various components of it? It all really came to a head for me once again when I was asked a question this week, as I've been asked ever since the election. Hey, Tom, did you ever expect to see this in your lifetime? Or the question would be, hey, Tom, did you see this coming? Or something to the effect, Tom, what just happened? Why are we, in the situation we're in? And did you see this? I'm smiling over as Kath is kind of looking at me going, the answer's simple. Yeah. Saw this coming. Yeah. Expected it to happen someday. Yeah. Where have you been for the last, 70 plus years? That's the real question. Where have people been as citizens for the last 80 years, 100 years, 150 years, where have we been? So as a side note, I sat with a friend of mine the other day and we were talking about constitutional classes and, this one that puts them on, that one that puts them on, and, who teaches well. And I got a little frustrated in that partly, and you've seen before when I had my bookcase behind in previous programming that I have the 5 volumes of the Founders Constitution. I'll probably pull one out just so you see that it's a small book and series of books, 5 books in the volume with very small print. And I said, here's the information. Here's the truth. Here's all the good stuff about the foundation and how our Constitution should operate, with both information from the Federalist, which a lot of people read, and the Anti-Federalist, and other supporting letters and documents. Oh, yeah. And, we could go ahead and beat that dead horse over the end of the cavern there. And that dead horse called American education, what's happened with it. We can go through all of those types of discussions, efforts, gyrations that I continuously have spoken of for many years that, if you really want to do something to bring about the solid vote, you had to go back and take the educational system away from those who now control it. That's in every place, every city, every state, in the federal government, all of that. It's cold in Ohio. I hope that you're enjoying your coffee. So all of those that can't see, as I take a sip of my coffee, think about that. Why have people, or think about this, why have people not looked at their educational system seriously? Man, that's good coffee. So let's take a step back in history. We're going to go back, not all the way to the founding of the nation. We're going to go back a few years after the founding then you're going to do the math. Here's a education question for you. So go ahead and go to what was it? When did the Constitution go into effect? Went through the convention in 1787, went into effect in 1789. Well, there was something that happened between, and I've talked to you about this before. You'll see in the promo and then on the website at where? Right up here, SamuelAdamsReturns.net, that you will see that I have these references here for you, and that what you will also see is that this individual by the name of Arthur Stansberry, he looked around and he said, something's not right. Something is not right. And therefore, he took and said, well, what do I do about it? The educational system's really messed up. Arthur Stansberry is looking around and going, nobody understands how government is supposed to work. Nobody understands that our Constitution is not that hard to understand and act upon. Arthur Stansberry then said, well, I need to do something. And he did. He came up with over 332 questions with basic answers for every citizen, but he didn't write it for every citizen. He wrote it for and at the level of none other than, what do you call them? You know, the little one? Elementary students. So this is written for elementary students, and so that means that even you could understand it. And I can understand it and answer the questions, or should be able to. Anyway, so here's the math. In 1789 was when the Constitution went into effect. By 1828, Stansberry publishes a catechism on the United States Constitution because nobody understood what was going on and it really wasn't being taught. And it wasn't being implemented to the extent that our founders, when he started reading the Constitution and some founding documents, went, uh-oh, we are in trouble. So here you have, there's your math question. You take and you put on the top is 1828. Then right under it with a minus sign in front, that's a dash, for those that, as some people would say, live in places where they don't teach that. And if you really look at your keyboard, it's kind of like they're next to the zero on a keyboard, on the numeric portion of the top of a keyboard. So anyway, this was, again, it's 1828. Underneath that, you put that dash or the minus sign, and you put in 1789. Then you draw a line underneath that, and then you do the math. How many years was that between the implementation, the agreement of the states to formalize a form of republic, a government, a national institution, and somebody stands up and goes, whoa, nobody understands it. Nobody has a clue what's going on. Let's see. What type of question? Let's see. Here's some questions. Has Congress any farther powers? So, I mean, he's going through all these powers on Congress. What is meant by establishing these? And that would be like the post office and various things like that. Powers given to Congress. What power is given to Congress by the Constitution? Simple question. What do you mean by these different terms? What is a tax? Kath gave me 5 minutes. What are duties? What are imposts? What are excises? Holy smokes, you're getting a lesson in economics at the same time that you're trying to understand, you know, what the Constitution is all about. Well, I did mention to my friend that as I come up with some spare time here in the near future, which I will have some for the rest of this month, that at one point I was looking at, again, putting a foreword on this, but these questions, this catechism, as you go to samueladamsreturns.net, you can download the free PDF on these questions. Take and go through it yourself, and then why don't you take and go through it with your adult children, then your grandchildren, or go through it with your children, and I guarantee you, you will have more insight and knowledge than the majority of the people sitting in Congress and all of the bureaucrats throughout all of Washington, D.C. and its distributed tentacles. And, yeah, even those politicians within your state. And, quite frankly, some judges. And lawyers. A lot of lawyers don't understand the Constitution. They only understand the nonsense they're taught at what do they call those schools? I think that anyway, they're not even, anyway, law schools. So with that also, I made a comment to this friend. When we were living in Washington State, I started doing a catechism for Washington State of the same method, means of questions, and all of that. I did say that I would entertain and begin going through where we live now in the state of Ohio, and I would be going through the Ohio Constitution such that I'd start putting something together to ask the various questions. State constitutions are definitely more difficult because of their construct and all of the junk, like in Ohio, that was amended into the Constitution that doesn't make the Constitution a simple governing document. But the way the Ohio Constitution was written, for instance, we shouldn't have all that amended junk in there in the first place, because it absolutely, in my opinion, from a founding perspective, has allowed us and even the likes of our governor to become the little dictators that we're seeing all over this nation. How's your house built? Well, what we're going to get into in the next couple of segments as well is again, going back to the questions that I've been asked. Tom, did you see this coming? Tom, you know, did you ever think this would happen in your lifetime? Well, all I can say in general is to go review all the programs, and the answer is without question, yes. The Anti-Federalists predicted where we would be if we did not have what? If we did not have a moral and virtuous people. So we are going to look at two different things within the context of these last two segments. One is we will come back and look at none other than a book that I put up before called Philip Drew, that's D-R-U, Administrator. That was written and finally admitted by Edward Mandel House. The references are there on the website for you to go find more on what I did on some of the programs, as well as a free download on Philip Drew, Administrator. And again, we'll talk about it in the next segment a little bit more in more detail. The version that I have up there for you to download is one that I highly recommend, because the foreword from 1998 I thought was exceptionally well done. There's also another link that if you don't want to understand these analysis of this book, that you can just go ahead and download the book. But the bottom line is that there's a great little outline that brings into culmination those that want power, almost like a blueprint. Some people call it a blueprint. Others say, oh, that, you know, a bunch of nonsense. But the fact and reality is that we're living not 1984, but Philip Drew. So come on back in the next segment, because Samuel Adams, he got it right, and so did the Anti-Federalist. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns. Those Anti-Federalists, they did. They absolutely got it right. And, you know, Liberty Works Radio Network has been fabulous to me, and what the programming has been. We're on those three different time slots. And I'll tell you what, now more than ever, everybody's out there screaming for money. Money, 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 you know. Every email you get, I don't know, I'm probably trashing 100 emails a day with tidbits and teasers and all these things. And then, you know, send us your money because we got to have it. You know, we got to do that. But anyway, you get it. Liberty Works Radio Network doesn't really do that. If you are signed up for their newsletter, they're giving you some scheduling content within what's going to happen during the week. You get the flashes, hey, here's the programming, live programming, what's going on. Not so much, obviously, with the weekend programming where I am. But the fact of the matter is that they've been fighting for liberty for decades, and it's a real good mix. So with that real good mix, I highly recommend once again, and will always and continue, to find that donate button. And let's keep Liberty Works Radio Network fighting for liberty, and as a network that gives you an alternative source to all the other insanities that are out there. Hey, these guys never have gone big because they believe in truth to the core. So, you know, you really want truth, you could chase it wherever you would like to, but I would highly suggest you look at the content here at Liberty Works Radio Network. So let's get back to, how do you build your house? How's the house built? How is it constructed? Is there a blueprint? Are there those types of things that just make it into either that Hearst castle, that Neuschwanstein, that was never really lived in by Mad Ludwig? Or is it that shack in the back? I don't know. What is it, your house? Well, the house that I'm talking about here in respect to Philip Drew, DRU administrator, is a book that was written by a gentleman, which the references are there at samueladamsreturns.net. And it's a guy that had too much money, another spoiled brat, if you will, that had way too much money and ended up with way too much influence and became a socialist. Isn't it always amazing to you? I know it always amazes me, but, you know, scripture talks about it, that money corrupts, not money itself, but the lust of power and the lust of those things that money or mechanisms of power have over people and what that does. Even with envy, that's another biggie. The things that happen with that are a driving force. And so when someone has more than anybody else, it always is amazing to me that they would be a socialist. Well, that is exactly not a real colonel, but a guy that claimed to be a colonel was. His name was none other than the notorious Edward Mandel House. Edward Mandel House grew up in Texas, wealthy family. You can look up all the details. I don't want to get into those here. I got tons of references for you. He was the alter ego of Woodrow Wilson. And there's a lot of history that talks about here. He was so influential at the beginning of the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, is that in some articles that are out there, it is actually... the name is given Edward Mandel Woodrow Wilson as one name and taking out his last name, because everything that Woodrow Wilson ended up doing was in so many ways clearly laid out by Mr. House. And Mr. House was the one that in his papers, and I didn't read all his papers because there's a lot to read there, but in some of the tidbits that I was able to draw from and resources, when he was asked on how did he get Woodrow Wilson's attention, he just said he gave him $35,000. Now, you have to understand $35,000 in somewhere around 1911, 1910, 1911 is like $800,000 and, you know, $1 million in today's money. So in other words, he bought Woodrow Wilson. He found that Woodrow Wilson's mindset was so much like his that he was able to do the old Vulcan mind meld and actually get Wilson to execute on the various things that he was intent on. A lot of that was he was the father and the help and the primary designer for the Federal Reserve. He was the one that put together the League of Nations. He actually took and negotiated the treaty, the armistice, with after World War One with the Germans. This guy had amazing, amazing influence, and he just was really, 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 really one rich dude. But prior to taking and getting involved with Wilson, he wrote this little book. The book, let me see here, rawr, a little growl for you. The version that I have up there for you that I'm highly recommending you read with the foreword is about 177 pages. The actual book itself is, you know, less than that. 150, 160 pages. I'm sure you can get through this story. What is amazing in this book is you have this military guy who goes to, you know, the academy and comes out of there, graduates, and next thing you know, he is taking and developing a whole mechanism on how to change, fundamentally change America, how that the Constitution is meaningless. We need to have an administrative, bureaucratic means and methodology of doing things. So what House was able to build along the way is he developed a policy group, and he worked with the likes of Vanderlip, J.P. Morgan, Paul Warburg, He was the designer and one of the founders of what has now become the Council on Foreign Relationships. The Council on Foreign Relations. So under the CFR and what they've done, it is designing the mechanisms of an industrialized oligarchy that rules the United States under a different definition of constitutionalism, giving all power to consensus form of government. In essence, it is a form of Marxism. So you have to understand that. And House was definitely a socialist. And he looked at it from more of a Fabian perspective instead of let's just slowly, because he tried with some things, especially during the Wilson administration, to make a direct attack within the changing the government. Oh, and don't forget, yes, House was a counselor, an influencer within the FDR administration. So a lot of what FDR put into place, House was a key designer of. So he actually looks, House, here's something that I found, House cheerfully, and it's in this the foreword to what I've suggested that you read. And here's why. He says that House cheerfully acknowledged that fact in an essay he wrote for Liberty magazine shortly after the election of FDR. And here's a quote. In 1911, I wrote a book entitled Philip Drew, Administrator. It came in for considerable discussion, favorable and unfavorable. It was, in fact, a semi-political novel showing how a dictator seized the government of the United States and anticipated Mussolini by a number of years, end quote. So this was in talking about right after FDR, talking about Mussolini, and the question is posed, was House, in fact, Mussolini before Mussolini came on scene? And then going through what House proposes inside of Philip Drew Administrator, the idea of the darlings of both corporate and intellectual elites coming together, and that even the leaders of America's mainline religious denominations were singing the praises of fascism in 1935. Dr. John C. Bennett, president of the Union Theological Seminary, praised fascism for its constructive value in a stage of the development of a new economic order, 1935. So you can read the rest of that intro on Philip Drew there at samueladamsreturns.net, where I have this PDF link there posted for you. It was in the promo as well. But, it gives you the opportunity to go through, get a synopsis of this, and understanding that what Philip Drew started in 1911, and then putting into play what Woodrow Wilson was very, very clearly outlined in this short read of Philip Drew Administrator. Also, you'll see that I do have links to what I've talked about in the past here at SamuelAdamsReturns.net, because those anti-federalists always have gotten it right. And what we're going to talk about as we move into the last segment will be that, again, that tie point as to how did this happen? How did we get to where we are in our present day and age? And, I hammer on a lot of the church leaders out there. And there's a lot of things going. What we have, and there's a link on the site to the enemies within the church, and very specifically to something that happened down in Naples, Florida, with one of the largest Baptist denominational churches from the Southern Conference in the U.S., and how these evil and insanities of social justice and wokeness and all these other things have been in and a part of, and even more so, embraced within the Southern Baptist Convention, as well as across America and a lot of the major denominations. I'm going to take you back to a root book again, because Sam Adams was, the whole program is about those mirrors in history. We can go all the way back to, the 1700s. We could go back to the 1600s. We could go back into history. And I always can bring relevance to our present in respect to that. But some people, at times, it becomes a little bit more difficult to grasp those things that were happening in those principles. Even with near history, history of 1911, that was only 100 years ago, history of 1935, history of just 10 years ago, history of 20 years ago, and bringing that relevant. Well, we'll do that in the next segment, because it is critical that we look at some of the writings of very instrumental components, again, of the church and what's happened here, because it comes down to where are the moral and virtuous leaders? Where are those that would stand up? Maybe we don't have a lot of perceived morality in Donald Trump, but he sure had the virtue to take and be an American and answer, you know, a lot of the questions on the catechism of the U.S. Constitution. So come on back. Anti-Federalists got it right, and we're going to dig in some more on house being built. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns. Those Anti-Federalists, they did. They absolutely got it right. And, you know, Liberty Works Radio Network has been fabulous to me, and what the programming has been. We're on those three different time slots. And I'll tell you what, now more than ever, everybody's out there screaming for money. Money, 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 you know. Every email you get, I don't know, I'm probably trashing 100 emails a day with tidbits and teasers and all these things, and then, you know, send us your money because we got to have it, you know, we got to do that. But anyway, you get it. Liberty Works Radio Network doesn't really do that. If you are signed up for their newsletter, they're giving you some scheduling content within what's going to happen during the week. You get the flashes, hey, here's the programming, live programming, what's going on. Not so much, obviously, with the weekend programming where I am. But the fact of the matter is that they've been fighting for liberty for decades, and it's a real good mix. So with that real good mix, I highly recommend once again and will always and continue to find that donate button. And let's keep Liberty Works Radio Network fighting for liberty and as a network that gives you an alternative source to all the other insanities that are out there. Hey, these guys never have gone big because they believe in truth to the core. So, you know, you really want truth, you could chase it wherever you would like to, but I would highly suggest you look at the content here at Liberty Works Radio Network. So let's get back to how do you build your house? How's the house built? How is it constructed? Is there a blueprint? Are there those types of things that just make it into either that Hearst castle, that Neuschwanstein, that was never really lived in by Mad Ludwig, or is it that shack in the back? I don't know. What's it? What is it? Your house? Well, the house that I'm talking about here in respect to Philip Drew, DRU administrator, is a book that was written by a gentleman, which the references are there at SamuelAdamsReturns.net. And it's a guy that had too much money, another spoiled brat, if you will, that had way too much money and ended up with way too much influence and became a socialist. Isn't it always amazing to you? I know it always amazes me, but, you know, Scripture talks about it, that money corrupts, not money itself, but the lust of power and the lust of those things that money or mechanisms of power have over people and what that does. Even with envy, that's another biggie. The things that happen with that are a driving force. And so when someone has more than anybody else, it always is amazing to me that they would be a socialist. Well, that is exactly who not a real colonel, but a guy that claimed to be a colonel was. His name was none other than the notorious Edward Mandel House. Edward Mandel House grew up in Texas, wealthy family. You can look up all the details. I don't want to get into those here. I got tons of references for you. He was the alter ego of Woodrow Wilson. And there's a lot of history that talks about here. He was so influential at the beginning of the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, is that in some articles that are out there, it is actually the name is given Edward Mandel Woodrow Wilson as one name, and taking out his last name, because everything that Woodrow Wilson ended up doing was in so many ways clearly laid out by Mr. House. And Mr. House was the one that in his papers, and I didn't read all his papers because there's a lot to read there, but in some of the tidbits that I was able to draw from and resources, when he was asked on how did he get Woodrow Wilson's attention, he just said he gave him $35,000. Now, you have to understand $35,000 in somewhere around 1911 is like $800,000 and, you know, $1 million in today's money. So in other words, he bought Woodrow Wilson. He found that Woodrow Wilson's mindset was so much like his that he was able to do the old Vulcan mind meld and actually get Wilson to execute on the various things that he was intent on. A lot of that was he was the father and the help and the primary designer for the Federal Reserve. He was the one that put together the League of Nations. He actually took and negotiated the treaty, the armistice, with after World War One with the Germans. This guy had amazing, amazing influence, and he just was really, 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 really one rich dude. But prior to taking and getting involved with Wilson, he wrote this little book. The book, let me see here. Rawr, a little growl for you. The version that I have up there for you that I'm highly recommending you read with the foreword is about 177 pages. The actual book itself is, you know, less than that. 150, 160 pages. I'm sure you can get through this story. What is amazing in this book is you have this military guy who goes to, you know, the academy and comes out of there, graduates, and next thing you know, he is taking and developing a whole mechanism on how to change, fundamentally change America, how that the Constitution is meaningless. We need to have an administrative, bureaucratic means and methodology of doing things. So what House was able to build along the way is he developed a policy group, and he worked with the likes of Vanderlip, J.P. Morgan, Paul Warburg, He was the designer and one of the founders of what has now become the Council on Foreign Relationships. The Council on Foreign Relations. So under the CFR and what they've done, it is designing the mechanisms of an industrialized oligarchy that rules the United States under a different definition of constitutionalism, giving all power to consensus form of government. In essence, it is a form of Marxism. So you have to understand that. And House was definitely a socialist. And he looked at it from more of a Fabian perspective instead of let's just slowly, because he tried with some things, especially during the Wilson administration, to make a direct attack within the changing the government. Oh, and don't forget, yes, House was a counselor, an influencer within the FDR administration. So a lot of what FDR put into place, House was a key designer of. So he actually looks, House, here's something that I found, House cheerfully, and it's in this the foreword to what I've suggested that you read, and here's why. It says that House cheerfully acknowledged that fact in an essay he wrote for Liberty magazine shortly after the election of FDR. And here's a quote. In 1911, I wrote a book entitled Philip Drew, Administrator. It came in for considerable discussion, favorable and unfavorable. It was, in fact, a semi-political novel showing how a dictator seized the government of the United States and anticipated Mussolini by a number of years, end quote. So this was in talking about right after FDR, talking about Mussolini, and the question is posed, was House, in fact, you know, Mussolini before Mussolini came on scene? And then going through what House proposes inside of Philip Drew Administrator, the idea of the darlings of both corporate and intellectual elites coming together, and that even the leaders of America's mainline religious denominations were singing the praises of fascism in 1935. Dr. John C. Bennett, president of the Union Theological Seminary, praised fascism for its constructive value in a stage of the development of a new economic order, 1935. So you can read the rest of that intro on Philip Drew there at samueladamsreturns.net, where I have this PDF link there posted for you. It was in the promo as well. But, you know, it gives you the opportunity to go through, get a synopsis of this, and understanding that what Philip Drew started in 1911, and then putting into play what Woodrow Wilson was very, very clearly outlined in this short read of Philip Drew Administrator. Also, you'll see that I do have links to what I've talked about in the past here at SamuelAdamsReturns.net, because those anti-federalists always have gotten it right. And what we're going to talk about as we move into the last segment will be that, again, that tie point as to how did this happen? How did we get to where we are in our present day and age? And, you know, I hammer on a lot of the church leaders out there. And there's a lot of things going. I mean, what we have, and there's a link on the site to the enemies within the church, and very specifically to something that happened down in Naples, Florida, with one of the largest Baptist denominational churches from the Southern Conference in the U.S., and how these evil and insanities of social justice and wokeness and all these other things have been in and a part of, and even more so, embraced within the Southern Baptist Convention, as well as across America and a lot of the major denominations. I'm going to take you back to a root book again, because Sam Adams was, you know, the whole program is about those mirrors in history. We can go all the way back to, you know, the 1700s. We could go back to the 1600s. We could go back into history. And I always can bring relevance to our present in respect to that. But some people, at times, it becomes a little bit more difficult to grasp those things that were happening in those principles. Even with near history, history of 1911, that was only 100 years ago, history of 1935, history of just 10 years ago, history of 20 years ago, and bringing that relevant. Well, we'll do that in the next segment, because it is critical that we look at some of the writings of very instrumental components, again, of the church and what's happened here, because it comes down to where are the moral and virtuous leaders? Where are those that would stand up? Maybe we don't have a lot of perceived morality in Donald Trump, but he sure had the virtue to take and be an American and answer, you know, a lot of the questions on the catechism of the U.S. Constitution. So come on back. Anti-Federalists got it right, and we're going to dig in some more on House being built.